Hello, hello.
I'm Savannah.
And I'm Alicia.
And this is Burden of Proof. I decided to be RuPaul today.
Nice. Don't get sued, though.
Oh, no. I'm a fan.
I don't think RuPaul would care.
I'm not monetizing off of hello, hello, hello.
That's true.
Also, Tim Gunn does something similar, so I don't really think we can. Or he goes, yeah. What does he say? Hello, designers.
That was pretty good.
I feel like I could do better. Not now, though. You don't get it now.
I'm waiting.
No, you don't get it now.
All right. Well, welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back.
Do we have business?
I don't know. The board's empty. I don't know when this comes out.
Well, this comes out in a couple weeks. We're like mid-April.
Okay. If we're mid-April, chances are our patrons, there's a poll up for you to vote for the May case.
Yes.
So do that, please. Yay. And we're gearing up for our live stream. So if you want to watch us on live, join our Patreon. I think that's the only business.
Sounds good. I think I don't have any business.
Cool.
I'm always clueless. I just work here. All right. Well, we have another survivor case.
All right.
I did not do this intentionally.
I'm just going to say, you're really into it.
I kind of forgot that it wasn't that long since my last survivor case, but
well, it has been that long since we recorded your last survivor case. So that's the difference.
True. So I kind of stumbled upon this case and I just wanted to talk about it, honestly.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot on the actual trial. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have some stuff, but most of the information out there is from Dateline. I'm not going to lie. I found what local articles I could. And yeah. Colorado, this particular county, does like public announcements on appeals and stuff. So I was able to find just the basics. There's not like the whole detailed report, but I was able to find the basics. So, yeah.
Is it Colorado or Colorado?
I say Colorado.
I say Colorado. I think it's with the accent that they say. So I'm from Colorado. I don't know. What accent do people from Colorado have?
I don't know. I think I've only met like one person that was, I've known people who lived there temporarily, but I only have met one person.
Sound off.
Yeah,
they let us know. There. How do we say Colorado?
Yeah.
It's not a word anymore. It's lost.
I know. Any word that you say too much starts to sound weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whoop,
you ready for this?
I'm buckled up.
Buckle up. So this is the survival story of Amber Smith. I do want to mention, I know there's another Amber Smith that actually was a murderer or something that popped up in my in my searches. So this is not to be confused with that Amber Smith. I believe that Amber Smith was in Michigan.
Okay.
So this is not that story.
Different story.
This is the survival. Or survive. Yeah, you know what I'm trying to say.
I do, yeah.
So in August of 2013, Amber Smith was a 20-year-old single mom living in Fort Collins, Colorado. Colorado, if you will.
I'm pretty sure it's Colorado.
She hadn't always made the best choices in life, but had recently made some changes to better her and her 3-year-old son's lives. She pursued getting her GED and had a steady job at a local convenience store. Still, like any 20-year-old, she chose to go out with a friend on a Friday night while her best friend babysat. Amber was hanging out with her friend, Eric Vanagunas. I had to think about how to say it.
Okay.
It's quite a name.
Vanagunas.
Yes. Eric Vanagunas.
That is very, very good.
Yeah. I thought about not putting it in there, but it's too good of a name
you got to put it in there.
So her and Eric are hanging out. The two had gone to Rossboro Park and had been drinking vodka. I guess straight up vodka.
Just
is what it sounded
just
like.
Just like from the brown bag vodka?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's what she told the cops eventually. So.
Okay.
The last thing that Amber remembered before she woke up bound, gagged, and unable to see because her eyes had even been duct taped over.
It's got serious really quick.
Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay.
She was then brutally assaulted, raped, strangled, and left for dead. Only she wasn't dead. Around 4 in the morning, 911 dispatchers began receiving calls from residents near a different park, Cottonwood Glen Park, to be exact. They all said the same thing. They could hear a woman's screams coming from the park. Rookie officer Dane Stratton was on duty and proceeded to the park. Having only been on the job for 2 months, he was quite concerned with what he was about to encounter. He drove through the park with his spotlight, but still couldn't see her until he got to the back where there was an access road. As he turned the car to go down that road, he could plainly see Amber sitting in the road with what he described as red all over her face. She had been left wearing nothing but one sock and bound with red duct tape. The perpetrator had wrapped the tape so tightly around her head to blind and gag her that it was cutting into her skin. The rest of the first responders arrived to cut her free and take her to the hospital. She was in bad shape. She had obviously been beaten and had multiple wounds that were bleeding, but Officer Stratton said he was also concerned that she may have had a brain injury because she was able to tell him her name, but was quite hysterical and really unable to recall anything else about what happened. His concern was fairly accurate. Amber's most serious physical injuries included signs of strangulation, a brain bleed, a broken jaw, and one eye that was swollen almost completely shut.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she doesn't even look like herself.
No.
They, of course, also performed an exam that confirmed she had been raped and processed a series of DNA swabs on multiple areas of her body. Once settled in at the hospital, Detective Siobhan Seymour interviewed Amber, hoping she would recall something more. Amber told her that she had been drinking with her friend Eric in Rossboro Park, and the next thing she remembered was waking up naked with her... I think I got that detail wrong, I'm going to admit.
Okay.
Her eyes were taped over once she woke up. She had been drinking.
Right.
She didn't have a chance to grasp where she was, so she didn't really see where she was. But she woke up face down and bound and gagged, and there was a man on top of her.
Right.
That's what she knew. Given the severity of the crime, Detective Seymour believed it may have been a repeat offender and was worried that they would strike again. Assuming that the attacker's intent was to kill Amber, the detective ordered the hospital to keep her under an alias. And immediately tracked down her friend Eric Vanagunas. Even though Amber didn't necessarily believe the man who raped her was Eric, he was the last known person to be with her. So it didn't sit well with detectives that someone would commit such an atrocious crime against a complete stranger. So, of course, they're going to look into Eric.
Well, I mean, yeah, but they also, A, they need to look into him because if they didn't, that would be stupid. But B, she can't tell them what happened. So maybe he can.
Yes, exactly. And of course, when I say it would be odd for a person to commit such a crime, other than obviously a serial rapist or serial killer, but the average person to do something so brutal.
Right.
Actually has to have like an aggression towards that person. So with a warrant in hand, Detective Seymour and her partner went to Eric's home where he lived with his parents. His mother answered and told them that they could find him volunteering at a local church, which was a little surprising to them. Instead of waiting on him to come back, they went to the church to speak with him. And Detective Seymour got the impression that Eric already knew that something happened to Amber, but he still seemed surprised that they were there to talk to him.
Why are you surprised? Okay, so why did they think that he knew?
She said that he just seemed to already know that something happened, but he didn't necessarily know what happened.
Like he had just heard through the grapevine, like, oh, yes. Amber's in the hospital or something like that.
Yes. Okay. And like initially... The detective didn't know, like, wait, do you know something because you know something or you know something because you heard something?
Right.
But by the end of the conversation, I think she had kind of figured out that it was because he heard something, because he didn't really seem to know a lot.
Right.
Eric corroborated Amber's details of hanging out in Rossboro Park and drinking, but said that Amber fell asleep on a bench and he couldn't wake her. He claimed that he left her there and went back a little later. Yeah, your face. So he left her there. Yeah, he left her there when he couldn't wake her. And he went back a little later to check on her because he didn't obviously feel right about leaving her.
Because it was wrong.
Yeah. But she was still sleeping and he couldn't get her up. So even though he felt bad, he left and he went home. And he admitted that to the cop. He admitted that to the detective.
I mean, at least he said, but like, I mean, what the hell?
Yeah.
You can't make this shit up, people. I mean, oh.
Yeah. Mm. The detective, you know.
Vanna Gunis is Vanna Baddis.
The detective, you know, was like, okay, so okay, that's why you're being kind of funky. Like said, it was obvious he was embarrassed that he.
And he should be.
Yeah. But she picked up on his genuine surprise, like once he heard what exactly happened. So he knew something happened, but he didn't know how bad it was. Detective Seymour directly asked him if he had a sexual relationship with Amber, to which he said no. He then agreed to provide them with a sample of his DNA for comparison. So the lab put a rush on those results, obviously, and detectives circled back to the hospital to check in on Amber and see if she had remembered anything else. Terrified but more lucid at that point, Amber was able to tell Detective Seymour some further details. The last moment she remembered from the park with Eric was using his phone to listen to music and still drinking. She admitted she must have blacked out from drinking too much, but the next thing she remembered was waking up face down on a floor.
Okay.
Bound and gagged with duct tape. At that point, like I said, I had messed up in the beginning, but at that point, her eyes were not covered. But she knew I'm in trouble. She started screaming and tried to break free from the tape. And that's when her attacker wrapped a rope of some kind around her neck and began choking her. The words he uttered to her, she could not share publicly.
Okay.
But she said that she did not recognize the voice, which is why she didn't think it was Eric. When she didn't stop screaming in between chokings, he punched her in the face. And Amber said that she thought it might be her last moments, but then she thought of her son. And that gave her the strength to continue fighting and trying to get away. That is until he pulled the rope a little longer, enough that she lost consciousness again. When she woke the last time, she was in another park. She didn't know where, of course, but it was the Cottonwood Glen Park, and her entire head was covered in duct tape. So she could not see. She had no idea if he was still nearby. She just knew, okay, now I'm outside. So she waited a few moments, and then knowing it might be her last chance, she began screaming again. And that's when the neighbors called the cops. Officer Stratton found her. While it was a good sign of recovery that she was remembering these things, there was unfortunately no identifying information in Amber's recall of the events. So detectives were forced to rely on the DNA evidence. Meanwhile, Amber was released from the hospital after a brief stay. For recovery, and she was placed in a safe house.
Right.
While they continued the investigation. And as any survivor can probably attest to, she felt anything but safe. It's terrifying enough to know who your attacker was and live in fear of facing them. I cannot fathom what it would be like to just have to try and carry on with life having no idea who did this to you and walk through life wondering if every guy that looks at you a little too long, if it's him. Everyone working the case had hope that the DNA would match someone already in the system.
Right.
They just were fairly convinced that there's no way this is somebody's first offense. Statistically, it seemed probable that an offense that brutal would be
someone's
second or
third.
At least second or subsequent offense. But a week after the attack, the lab called Detective Seymour with good and bad news. They had excellent results with the samples taken from the crime and had a single full profile, meaning there was only one person responsible. Unfortunately, they were unable to find a match. Eric Van Agunis did not match, nor did they find anyone in the database that matched.
Well, that would be too easy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, we wouldn't probably be talking about the case. It would have been an open shut case. If Amber's attacker had committed a crime like this before, he hadn't been caught. Everyone was devastated for Amber and the community. Officer Stratton said he couldn't imagine that this person hadn't committed a crime like this before, but if it was their first crime, he questioned what on earth they would do next.
I was going to say, that would be my next fear, is the next time we are going to have a body.
Yes.
I mean, he thought he did the first time.
Amber tried to carry on, but says that she struggled with thoughts of him hurting someone else and guilt. She says she blamed herself for making the choice to drink in the park.
Honey, no.
Yeah.
You didn't make the choice to rape and strangle someone, so therefore, not your fault.
And you were with a friend that you trusted.
Yeah.
And that's, like, really all you can do. If you're going to drink and let loose, the best you can do is do it somewhere and with someone or some ones that you believe you're safe with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, all you can do is what you can do. And you did what you could.
Exactly.
Your friend didn't, but whatever.
Not surprisingly, Amber grew very isolated over that first year or so after the attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes. And then some friends invited her to move into a house with them. Most of them were guys that helped her feel accepted and safe.
I can see that. I mean, it's a lot like when girls have issues with boyfriends or with their dad, they lean on to the men in their life that they can trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I 100% understand that.
Yes. In particular, one of the roommates, Bryce Bailey, and his friend, Stefan Moon, better known as Sam, who used to live in the house, but at that point had moved out, but would still often like crash on the couch and hang out and just be around. Sam, in particular, was very kind and always very supportive when talking to Amber. She grew to really trust him and eventually shared her survival story with him. When she told him, he was very understanding and validated her, exclaiming that no one should ever have to go through that, and he was so sorry she experienced it. All their kindness helped Amber to carry on, and eventually she was able to move out of the house and into her very own apartment. Because she had a son, so,
you know,
that's not an ideal living situation when you have kids. She had come to accept that her case may never be solved and did her best to carry on and focus on raising her son. Meanwhile, Detective Seymour kept her ear to the ground, following up on anything that could possibly be connected. The most promising had come out of Virginia, where a man had used duct tape to bind a murder victim. But alas, he wasn't a match. She finally was forced to put the case aside when it officially went cold.
Alicia, you're really bumming me out right now.
I'm sorry. It has a better ending, so hang in there.
I was going to say, are you like done? Because this would be really depressing.
No. Detective Seymour and Officer Stratton both could never let the case go, though.
Right. I feel like this is one of those that it's so extreme that it would haunt.
Yes.
I mean, it would haunt me, and I'm not even directly involved. Like, if you had said, that's the end, we're done, it's a cold case, I would have gone home, and I would not have been able to put this down.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine somebody who's invested, whose entire job is to solve this, would be satisfied with that.
Yep. That's pretty much what happened. They both desperately hoped the perpetrator would slip up somehow, but they also didn't want anyone else to suffer what Amber had. So you're stuck in that, like, right. I don't want anything else to happen, but I want him to get caught. How do you reconcile that? That would be a terrible place to be.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Fortunately, their wish came true when Bryce Bailey, Amber's former roommate, called the police to report his bike stolen.
I had a feeling.
Officers' investigation of the theft led them to find the bike at a local pawn shop. The shop owner cooperated fully and gave the officers all the information he had on the person who brought him the bike. This was really bad news for the thief, because the state of Colorado takes this crime very seriously.
Yeah, it's like a vehicle theft.
It's a felony to lie or provide false information to a pawnbroker.
Interesting. I thought you meant the bike. I'm like, yeah, you're stealing a vehicle. It should be taken seriously. I mean, yeah. I knew you weren't talking about the bike, but how funny.
That was like the joke. Not as serious, but yeah.
But you know what? They should take bike theft seriously, because that is somebody's vehicle.
It sometimes is. Yeah.
You
sometimes
know, they rely if they on get that. To ride on the road, it should be grand theft. If I have to watch you do a turn signal, it should be grand theft. That's the rule.
There.
But interesting, alas, that lying to a pawn shop.
It's because there's so much
like
theft and,
yeah,
you know, people take it to pawn shops. And yeah, so it's such a problem in Colorado that they made it a felony, which requires DNA sample to be taken and put into CODIS. So, they tracked down the suspect, and he was arrested and processed. His DNA was submitted to CODIS. I don't know how to say it, but I had in my notes, isn't that crazy? They take bike theft so seriously. just kidding. But Detective Seymour then got notified that they found a match. Ding, ding, ding. If your spidey sense is working, then you know Stefan Moon, aka Sam, was the bike thief and Amber's attacker. That's right. The very kind and supportive friend who'd offered both validation and hugs to her when she confided in him about her rape was in fact the man who raped her.
I knew it.
Sam, being someone Amber met a year or more after her attack, he was never part of the investigation.
Interesting. Interesting. So did he know it was her when he met her later? Like, did he recognize her? And was like...
We don't know. That's the one question.
It's kind of horrifying either way. Like, both ways are terrifying to think about. Like, he saw her and was like, yes, it was you. I'm going to keep you close. Or he had no idea until she told him the story. Both of those are terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
All of it is terrifying. This is horrible.
I agree. That's why I wanted to talk about it after seeing it. So, of course, the detective, she was ecstatic. We have him. We have him. We have his DNA. He's already been arrested for the bike theft. Like, she couldn't wait to tell Amber. Only she didn't get the response from Amber she expected. When she heard they found a match, Amber was elated. But when she showed Amber the picture of Sam, she was stunned and said, oh my God, that's Sam. There's no way. There has to be a mistake.
Yeah, like, this is wrong. I lived with him. I had my kid around him. Like,
he was so nice. Like, he wouldn't hurt a fly. What are you talking about? Because it was very, you'll see just how out of character this is for him. So Amber was like, no, this can't be. Of course, the detective didn't know that Amber knew Sam, so she was taken aback. After all, the lab had confirmed it was as good of a match as you can get. The lab technician that was interviewed said something about, like, it was a 1 in 10 quintillion match. Like,
it's him.
It's him.
That was my next question, was, like, how sure are they? Because I do know that they can get the stats when they do DNA and stuff like that. They can tell you if it's, like...
They were sure. And it was from multiple samples.
Right. Like, they had solid choices.
It was as solid as you can get. Amber explained to Detective Seymour that she didn't meet him until long after the attack, and he was nothing but kind. He's not a guy that's aggressive. He never showed any sort of creepiness or weirdness towards me. I mean, talk about a mind fuck. Like,
I mean, that's so weird.
Yeah. Amber just couldn't wrap her mind around it.
I can't wrap my mind around it, much less her.
Yeah. The detective asked her to call Sam and confront him about it. And Amber agreed reluctantly. The conversation went as one might expect. Amber started with a casual greeting and then jumped into the point. She said, quote, "So remember how I told you about, like, that stuff that happened to me in 2013? About that guy that broke my jaw and stuff?" Sam confirmed he remembered. And she continued with, "Yeah, so the police contacted me and said, your DNA matched." Sam began stammering. "What? Oh my God, Amber, I don't know what to say. I did not hurt you." Amber said, "Okay, but they have your DNA, so how do you explain that?" After some back and forth of her asking and him stammering in denial, he finally said, "It was you at Rossboro Park that night, right?" She confirmed. He said, "Yeah, we had sex. I didn't hurt you. We had sex." His tone suddenly got very aggressive, and he implied that she was having sex with strangers in the park, and he simply accepted. He then quickly ended the call.
Sir, I think we would know if there was a woman propositioning strangers. I feel like somebody else would have said, there was a weird girl. That doesn't make any sense because it's a lie. But
it gets, you know, once he has time to think about
the
rest of his story, it gets even better. So detectives, of course, didn't believe his story, and they arrested him.
BS.
He had gotten out, like, he had been arrested for the bike thing, but I think he had been released on bail or whatever. So they go and they find him and they arrest him shortly after the phone call. Through uncontrollable sobbing, he swore he never hurt Amber and that he's not a rapist. When Detective Seymour finally got him to calm down, instead of asking for an attorney, he shared his story, and it was quite a gem.
I'm so not ready, but go ahead.
He claimed that he saw a Craigslist ad offering free sex in the park, so he simply took her up on the offer. He said he had just separated from his wife and was really down about it, so he went to the park and had sex with a girl he didn't know. He specifically claimed he didn't see her face or notice anything about her. Okay,
so number one, we could easily find a Craigslist ad and verify your story, sir. Mm-hmm. We can go back and see free sex in park. Like, we can find that, except we won't. Because you're a liar.
He said that afterwards he went home, which at the time was the house that Amber had
eventually moved into.
And he told his then friend and roommate, Bryce Bailey, "Hey, there's a girl in the park giving out free sex. You should go get some." Sam claimed he told Bryce to go. And an hour or two later, Bryce came back home with a girl. He said he stayed in his room because he could hear screaming and yelling, but when it abruptly stopped, he went on about how he looked under his door and watched Bryce carry her through the house, and then they left. And he specifically said her whole head was covered in red and bloody. I'd keep that in mind.
Yeah, I've got it. It's in there. So I didn't have a good feeling about this Bryce guy either at the beginning. So I don't know how to feel right now, because I do think it was Sam who did it. They wouldn't have had his DNA on file if it wasn't. But now I'm like, was there somebody else involved? And also, it's absolutely horrible that he's implying, and even if it's true, that's even worse, that she was assaulted in the house that she would then live in.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me want to cry. She's mm-hmm. nodding. I'm going to cry.
Well, I guess we don't know for sure, but we know she did wake up on a floor. That's when horrible. She was being assaulted.
That's horrible.
He swore to detectives that he believed Bryce had killed her. In answer to why he didn't report it to police at the time, he claimed that when he brought it up to Bryce the next day, Bryce beat the crap out of him. So Detective Seymour calmly stopped him at that point and explained that some of his story just wasn't making sense. She went on to detail exactly how they found his DNA. He didn't know how they found the DNA or where they found his DNA. He just assumed, oh, well, I had sex. Like, I can just tell you that I had sex with you and it was consensual.
Yeah, but you said they pulled it from all over her body.
Mm-hmm. So his story would explain how his DNA would be found in her vajayjay.
Oh, my God. Okay, yes. In her vajayjay.
But not how they found it in multiple samples, including the scratches on her neck, on her hands, and both sides of the duct tape. Outside and sticky side.
Why you on the sticky side, dude?
Sam refused to confess. He stuck to a story that Bryce must have done it. So, while officers were executing their search warrant at his parents' home, where Sam was living at that time, Detective Seymour spoke with Brian and Susan Moon, his parents. Brian admitted that they had been in possession of red duct tape at some point over the years, but he believed they had used it all up. So she asked them to come in for an interview. They agreed, and the next day they met at the station. The interview began with how Sam was growing up and, you know, was kind of kid was he? She specifically asked, did you ever catch him like looking at porn and stuff like that? And the couple explained that he had always been a gentle soul, never aggressive or violent. Brian gave the example that Sam cried when watching the movie Of Mice and Men. They admitted Sam had always been kind of a screw-up, doing things like getting his license suspended after multiple unpaid traffic and parking tickets, but swore that he never showed any signs of violent criminal behavior. The couple expressed their utter shock over the news of what he was charged with because they did not think him capable of such a thing. Next, Detective Seymour went to check out the physical validity of Sam's story. She went to the house that the crime supposedly took place in and looked under the door he claimed he saw Bryce carry her out. As one would suspect, you could only see the feet of a person outside the room, nothing higher than maybe an ankle. She also interviewed Bryce Bailey. Bryce seemed very relaxed in the meeting and told her that the accusation was ridiculous. When she asked why Sam might do such a thing as accuse his friend, they were lifelong friends.
Right.
Bryce said that he might have just been scared, or he might have been trying to get revenge on him for getting him in trouble in the first place when he reported the bike stolen.
Well, how was Bryce supposed to know that his friend had stolen his bike?
He might have had his suspicion, but even if he did, like, you stole the bike. And he's sick of your crap, Sam. Yeah. So, despite Sam's accusation, Bryce was genuinely shocked that he could have committed such a crime and said the only thing he could tell her about Sam that would indicate guilt is that Sam is a compulsive liar. Bryce also gladly gave a sample of his own DNA. Meanwhile, investigators had reached out to Craigslist to find out if there was any record,
right,
like you said. Not surprisingly, they found nothing that matched the details that Sam specified. Like, they found ads that were sketchy and whatever, but they did not find
an ad of
a girl in Rossboro Park giving out free sex.
Yeah, I'm not shocked that there are people offering free sex in parks. I'm just saying that this was, like, you can find the specifics of, like, which park. Or, like, the time frame or the night of posting or whatever. Like, there's way too many things to track
down. How sad is this world that you're not surprised?
I'm not shocked at all that people are offering free sex in parks on Craigslist. I'm really not.
Yikes. Yeah. So here we are.
Sex in a park is a crime. For the love of God, don't do it.
Yeah.
That's my PSA. It's my public service announcement for today.
Yeah. Nobody wants to see that.
No.
Especially at a park.
I was going to say, it's like, a park. There's kids.
Kids are probably rotten. Like,
and
no.
That makes you a pedophile, according to the law. So.
Gross.
Just saying. Spend your voyeuristic time wisely and don't do it in a park.
Okay. So the prosecution team were certain that Sam was guilty and that his intention that night was to leave Amber for dead. The state charged him with attempt to commit first-degree murder and a number of other charges. One of the challenges they had to overcome, though, was getting Amber to come to terms with it. She still was just in disbelief.
Yeah, I don't blame her.
She continued to question his guilt until the trial, which did not take place until August of 2019, 6 years after the crime. Detective Seymour was the first to take the stand and lay out the story for the jury. She told Dateline that it was an incredibly emotional case for her, and she felt as though she were fighting for a sister to get closure so she could move on. Officer Dane Stratton testified about finding Amber, and he too had difficulty containing his emotions. I don't think that Amber could have asked for a better team of people fighting for her.
No, they genuinely wanted it so bad.
Every single person from Officer Stratton through the prosecution team that worked her case and was interviewed by Dateline seemed genuinely invested in caring, not just stating the facts. You know how sometimes in those shows, and they interview, especially detectives, will seem like
detached. Yeah, it's their job.
It's their job. But yes, they're a little bit detached. That was not the case with this.
Which, honestly, I kind of understand that from just, like, even the legal standpoint. Like, I have cases that come through that I'm like, yeah, I care about it. And it's a, you know, I feel like we're on the right side and everything. But there's also cases that are just different that really stick with you, you know?
Yeah.
I have one right now that just, it wrecks my heart.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that this was against his attorney's better advice.
You're not going to say what I think you're going to say.
But Stefan Sam Moon took the stand in his defense.
Oh, you idiot.
And claimed the investigators just didn't look hard enough for that Craigslist ad. The defense claimed that because Amber was found in a puddle of fluid, his DNA must have spread through cross-contamination.
To the inside of the duct tape. To the inside of the duct tape.
The prosecution easily countered that claim with two facts. Both sides of the tape were swabbed in multiple areas, meaning that the little puddle of fluids would have to have seeped under all of that tape.
Buddy, it's duct tape.
And number two, they found no other DNA profiles. None.
No.
Nada.
Zilch. So if somebody's cleaning up their DNA off of a crime scene and they leave specifically yours in multiple places.
Yes, they managed to like leave yours in all of these places.
You know what? It was a super villain. And they can see molecules as their superpower.
They found her at one park. They literally had to pick her up and carry her because she was passed out. They transported her to a house. They brutally attacked her. And then they carried her back to a vehicle and transported her to another park. But they got none of their DNA on.
None of it.
None.
Jodi Arias left a whole handprint in blood and a full fingerprint in blood, but the other person left no DNA.
Yeah.
None. I'm not saying that as a point to the person. I'm saying that as a slight to Jodi Arias, but still, like,
the math ain't math.
No, because it's not true, because he's lying.
So Amber,
you just didn't look hard enough for the Craigslist ad.
Yeah.
Look harder into the metadata.
Well, that's where your defense team...
They could have found it.
...were responsible for finding it if it were there. And they didn't. This is where we need a video podcast.
We're just shaking our heads violently like, bruh.
Yeah. So Amber sat in the courtroom listening to all the testimony and evidence when it rushed over her like a wave that she needed to follow through and testify. The prosecutors told Dateline that she was phenomenal on the stand.
Oh, I have goosebumps. I have goosebumps.
She told the jury what she remembered and swore that she never, ever placed an ad on Craigslist. She says she felt empowered by testifying. Unfortunately, that feeling was crushed as the jury's finding on the first count was read. Not guilty on the charge of attempts to commit first-degree murder. The entire courtroom gasped. To say Amber and everyone that worked the case were disappointed would be a vast understatement. But thankfully, it wasn't over. Guilty of second-degree kidnapping, guilty on two counts of sexual assault, and guilty of first-degree assault.
I was going to say, I can see why they would say that they can't prove his intention was to murder her.
Yes.
They can prove that his intention was to make her pass out.
Yes.
Fine. I'll accept it. I don't like it, but I'll accept it. It's hard to be a juror, as I've said a million times, and know that, you know, you're making a choice. So,
fine. Yeah. But in that moment, I can understand how devastated... They all,
especially when it's the first one.
Yeah, because they feared. Even the prosecutor was like, that was the longest few seconds of my life. Because your instant thought is, oh my God, are they going to find him not guilty on all the other charges too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I would have actually have like a cardiac episode.
Yeah.
The
detective said that she felt sick. Like she's like, I wanted to vomit.
I would have. Yeah. There's no. And it's courtrooms are such an intense environment that it's just like everything is intensified. And
obviously, as big as that initial gasp, came a sigh of relief. At his sentencing hearing, Sam's defense attorney argued that Sam is only human and has, quote,
only just, human,
quote, just as many positives and negatives as all of us.
Listen, I know he's just doing his job, but what? The actual F.
They, of course, asked for the minimum sentence of 48 years to life with possibility of parole.
I like that that's the minimum sentence because I was very concerned about where we were going.
Yeah. Yeah. No, for all of those counts of various things that he was going to get a decent sentence and he got one. The prosecutor argued that the maximum sentence of 128 years to life was the only fair sentence.
Yeah.
To support this argument, they had Detective Seymour testify once again about a very compelling piece of circumstantial evidence that had to be left out of the trial.
Ooh, okay, we have a new piece.
When investigators seized his cell phone after his arrest, they found 624 searches for rape porn. Just let you simmer in that for a moment.
Okay, so there's about a million reasons why things are left out of trials.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why they
I do not.
Were not
other
allowed
than
to...
it, other than the only thing that
oh,
I...
Oh, I think I know why.
I think that, if anything, it's because this they didn't catch them until years after, and all of the searches had taken place after.
I think also, and I again, this is a great time to have the disclaimer that we're not attorneys. We just work in law. And have education in law as paralegals. But I think that that would technically be hearsay because it would be implying that he is guilty of the crime he is in question of, which I know yeah. seems counterintuitive to evidence, but that's why hearsay is so confusing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a complicated issue, but I think that's probably why it wasn't allowed in the trial.
Well, it helped in sentencing, though.
Yeah.
The judge agreed, stating, quote, "This is the only justice that can come out of this, the maximum sentence."
I agree.
Yeah. So Sam's parents, of course, spoke out against the sentence as they felt it unfair given that many convicted murderers get sentenced to less.
Okay, well, your son's only not a convicted murderer because he was lazy and
didn't die.
Yeah, like he let go. That's horrible to say, but like the reason I say it so vulgarly, like so bluntly, is that's the truth.
Yeah. Detective Seymour expressed her condolences to the Moon family, but said that she believed Sam was a ticking time bomb and it would be just a matter of time before he goes off again, should he be free.
I was going to say, I'm shocked he didn't reoffend while he in between in the six mm-hmm. years.
Same. According to the Colorado Department of Corrections, Stefan the 80s. I forget the name of the show now.
Family Matters.
Yes, Family Matters. By the way, Nicholas is in the studio with us today.
Fiance.
Executive producer.
Stefan is still serving his sentence and will not be eligible for parole until January of 2112, which is so weird to read. But good.
What's even weirder is that we will not be alive to see 21.
Yes. Stefan has filed at least two appeals, which were, of course, denied.
Right. Yeah. Because, duh.
Yeah. I just saw the public announcements of it, and I was like, that's good enough. We know.
Yeah.
We know why they're denied. It's okay. Amber told Dateline that she felt like she could finally move on with her life, and it seems as though she may have done just that.
Good.
In 2020, Detective Siobhan Seymour, who worked the case, started a GoFundMe campaign to help Amber go back to school to get her certification in addiction counseling. That's the last thing I found reported about Amber, but that's not surprising. In the Dateline interview, she admitted she was not one that likes the limelight. And I don't think any of us have enough time to like sort through all the Amber Smiths on social media to like try and track her down if she does have it. And if she does, it's probably private anyway. So she most likely just wants to live a quiet, peaceful life. And I hope that her and her son are getting to do that and are well. And
yeah,
that she's getting all the peace and healing she deserves.
I'm glad she got closure, but I mean, I hated this.
I know. But that twist, man, of him.
And
we don't know if he at some point figured out that she was the girl.
It's just terrifying.
If he knew the whole time. If he had no idea, because, and I think that that's why in his initial interrogation, he says, like, I just had sex with this girl and I didn't really see her face or see anything about her.
Because he didn't really see her face or see anything about her.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't just have sex with her. It's like an episode out of Criminal Minds. I swear, it's terrifying to think about that it's just such a small world.
Crazy.
Crazy. You're crazy.
Yeah. If you've stuck with us this far, leave us a bike emoji on Instagram, Facebook. Some people are leaving them on Spotify.
I was going to say you can leave them on Spotify, you can leave them on YouTube, wherever you're listening.
But especially if you do on our socials, you will get a Sunday shout out.
Whoop whoop.
And yeah. If you like what you've heard, don't forget one of the biggest ways to help us is by rating or reviewing us. That's all we got. Yeah. Thanks for listening.
If you need a palate cleanser after this really difficult episode, I highly recommend Schitt's Creek.
Yes. That's such a good palate cleanser.
Such a good show.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you, guys. Mm. Alicia, you did a fantastic job.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And we will see you guys next week.
Next week. Till next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening, guys. Find us on Instagram and TikTok at Burden of Proof Pod and email us at burdenofproofpod@gmail.com.